This is Audible.
Oh My Audiobooks presents Flesh into Fire, Book 3 of Original Sin, written by J.A. Huss and Jonathan McLean, performed by Tad Branson and Ava Erickson. Chapter 1. Tyler. My neck itches. I hate wearing a fucking collar. I really do. I think it comes from my time in the service and all the gear. I had so much shit all up around my neck and face all the time. Always made me feel like I was being choked or suffocated. Sometimes I was, of course, being choked or suffocated, so it's possible that it's really just a Pavlovian association of some kind, but regardless, I hate wearing a fucking collar. Good thing I never considered becoming a priest, for like 100 reasons, but the collar thing is one of them. But I'm wearing a collar today, for the second time in the last week, because I want to show the proper respect to the deceased. So, I borrowed one of Evan's $14,346 suits, I asked, and God knows how much they cost shirts and ties, and stuffed myself into them. There wasn't actually a lot of stuffing to be done. They fit great. Evan and I are almost exactly the same size, as it turns out. He and Robert went to Italy, Naples, I think, so they could both have several custom suits made by some famous bespoke tailor. So the suit is designed for his frame, but it might actually fit me just a little better. At least that's what Robert said, but he may have just been fucking with Evan. Anyway, my neck itches. I gotta shave again someday. Jeff's funeral was rough. Even though we didn't really know him at all, we went. Maddie and I, that is. Seemed like the right thing to do. For a lot of reasons, not least of all the fact that even though we didn't talk about it, I think he reminded Maddie of Scotty just as much as he did me. On some very evident level, it was a makeup funeral for the one I missed 7 years ago. A first responder funeral is a lot like a military one. There was a procession of fire trucks and police escorts all the way to the gravesite. All of Jeff's brothers in arms from all the station houses in town, wearing their dress uniforms. There were bagpipes, which is kind of weird. I know it's a thing they do, but I don't think Jeff was Scottish. Turns out his last name was Rossi, so I guess he was Italian, but whatever, doesn't matter. The bagpipes were a nice touch. Evan gave a eulogy. He talked about dedication and commitment and honor and all the things I'd expect, but then he did something I wasn't expecting at all. He talked about Jeff's 21st birthday, the night we went to the strip club. The night I saw Maddie dancing and fell in love with someone I knew but didn't know I knew. The strip club that burned down and killed Jeff in the process. The strip club that was burned down by people who did it to punish Maddie. Fucking hell. So understandably, I was a little nervous when Evan began telling the story. And not just for all the personal reasons, but also because telling a story about a guy at a strip club feels like it's better suited for a bachelor party than a funeral. But goddamn if Evan didn't somehow manage to make it sweet and kind and insightful and full of heart. And when he got to the part about Jeff throwing up on his expensive shoes, everyone was laughing and crying at the same time. It was perfect and made us all feel like we really knew Jeff, whether we did or not. I don't believe in heroes, but if you held a gun to my head and told me that I had to pick someone to claim as my personal hero, it'd have to be Evan Silver. Actually, if you held a gun to my head and told me to do anything, I'd tell you to go fuck yourself, but privately, inside, I'd be saying Evan Silver was my hero. Maddie was pretty beat up by the whole thing. The funeral, that is. When Evan started in on the strip club stuff, she gasped a little and squeezed my hand tightly. But she was hanging on, not crying too much, being a total champ, especially given how complicated I know her feelings must have been. She managed to stifle her tears pretty well, right up until Jeff's dad got up to speak. He said. I'm not typically inclined to talk a lot, so I'll keep this short. And he did. Because that was it. That was all he was able to manage. He stepped in front of Jeff's casket, all draped in the American flag, Jeff's picture on an easel beside it, very classic and traditional. And he readied himself to speak. But he couldn't. He just flat out broke down. It started with little spasms in his shoulders, but within seconds he had collapsed under the coffin and was sobbing uncontrollably. Turns out Jeff's mom passed away a couple of years ago after being hit by a drunk driver, so for the second time in 2 years, Jeff's dad had someone he loved taken from him, with absolutely no warning at all. The whole scene had me flashing for half a second to what my dad would have done if I had somehow died after my mom did. It wouldn't have been the same, of course. Not least of all because Barbara Morgan, née Hudson, died of cancer, so my dad had time to accept that it was coming, but still. I wonder if I had died in Iraq or Afghanistan and my body had been flown over for the funeral, would he have gotten all busted up over it? Would he have even shown up to the service? Would he have even known it had happened? But then I quickly remembered. Fuck it. Doesn't matter. Not about me. The person to go and comfort Jeff's dad was Brandon. New guy Brandon. Creepy, never says nothing to nobody Brandon. Brandon, who ran into a burning building to try to save Jeff and carried his limp, lifeless body out of the jaws of hell. Which is the only reason that Jeff is even inside that pine box and not pulverized and burned to a crisp inside the wreckage of a torched strip club. We couldn't hear what Brandon was saying. He just draped his arms around Jeff's pop and whispered in his ear until eventually the poor guy calmed down and Brandon led him away. I swear to God, I want to figure out what Brandon's story is, because it's got to be fucking fascinating. Anyway, seeing Jeff's dad lose it the way he did put Maddie over the edge. She moved around behind me, sobbing into my back, all over Evan's custom-made suit, and I did my best not to let her feel how much I was crying, too. So that was a fun day. Today we're in my car, headed to Raven's house for Pete's wake. Maddie's fidgeting in the passenger seat, chewing her nails. Is it fucked up to say that she looks beautiful and sexy in her black dress that cinches tight at the waist and showcases her fabulous tits? Or that the tulle, or whatever it's called, at the bottom causes me to imagine what it would be like to pull the car over to the side of the road, open the passenger door, lift all the poofy fabric over my head, and eat out her glorious pussy? Rhetorical question. Of course it's fucked up. We're going to a goddamn wake. But I feel like if Pete knew that this was what I was thinking, he'd give me the thumbs up and tell me to go for it. No, says Maddie, out of nowhere. No what? I reply, still thinking about pussy eating. You're thinking about eating my pussy, not now, okay? We're going to a wake. How the fuck did she know? How the fuck did you know? I start, before she cuts me off. Because you're staring at my lap, kind of swirling your tongue around. Jesus, really? I was? Hey, she says, I'm flattered, and honestly, I'd love you to go down on me.
I start to veer the car off to the side of the road, but, she puts her hand on the steering wheel and directs us back into the flow of traffic,
we're going to a wake.
She really emphasizes the word,
and
she starts, but then stops herself.
And what? I ask her,
noticing a little furrow in her brow.
I have a lot of shit on my mind.
I nod. I don't have to ask. I know what she's talking about. Carlos Castillo. The money she owes him. The fact that he and his dipshit nephew, Logan...
Huh. I should find out Logan's last name.
The more you know about a douchebag, the better your shot at wielding some power over him, anyway. She's thinking about the fact that both Jeff and Pete are dead because of the debt she owes Carlos. It's not her fault, of course. On some deep level, she's aware of that, but she still feels guilty.
Shit. How could she not?
I tell her, I've told you I will... I stop myself and autocorrect.
We will pay that dick sucker back, okay? And then you'll be clear, and then... Fuck that, she says decisively. I'm not giving that asshole one penny of my money.
Technically, it's my money, I think, but wisely avoid saying out loud.
But I do owe him. Do I fucking ever?
She says, staring out the window, still biting at her nails. Which concerns me just a tad. She's been saying stuff like that since the fire.
I've made the choice not to question her too much about it, but I'm getting a little worried that her hinges might have gotten knocked a bit loose with everything that happened, and that she might actually be considering doing something like, oh, I don't know, murdering a Mexican drug lord. But hey, I get the impulse. I want to kill the fucker too. But to me, actually doing it seems ill-advised. Hey, I say, reaching over and patting her knee, which gets me hard, and which I've just accepted is what's going to happen every time I'm near her for the rest of my life, and I've made my peace with it. It's all going to be okay. Okay? I promise. One way or another, we're going to handle this Carlos thing. She keeps staring out the window. Okay? Maddie? Madison? Mads? Angel? Mm-hmm, she mumbles, still biting her nails. Shit. I really thought I was done helping kill people. Raven's house is nice. I don't know what I expected, but it's just totally suburban and basic and kind of sweet, tucked away in a cul-de-sac that's all decorated with holiday lights, looking kind of like a Courier and I's Christmas postcard. If Courier and I's had made postcards set in the desert with cacti and iguanas instead of pine trees and horses and shit. We stride up the walkway, Maddie in front of me, her ass swaying along with her skirt, causing me to hold the flowers I'm carrying in front of my junk so that when she opens the door, the first thing Raven's greeted by won't be me and my big old pal Chucky Stiff. I used to call it Johnny Butch, but Chucky Stiff sounds funnier. We reach the door and Maddie rings the bell. It gives one of those cathedral-like chimes, which is a very Vegas thing for a doorbell to do. I love it. The door swings open and Raven is there. Not unrecognizable per se, but certainly more like someone masquerading as Raven and less like Raven herself. She's wearing a dark blouse and black silk trousers with what look like closed-toe black shoes. The blouse has a high, ruffled collar and one of those silky cravat-slash-bow things that society chicks will occasionally wear. I got invited by terrible accident to a party in the Hamptons once, and there were a couple of older broads wearing that kind of shit. What's surprising about seeing it on Raven is that it doesn't look out of place at all. It looks right at home on her. And suddenly, the idea that she worked, in a strip club is actually what feels weird. Maddie, she says, and gives Maddie a hug, which seems to take Maddie by surprise. She lets her arms dangle for a second before she realizes herself and hugs Raven back. After a long moment, they release their embrace and she waves us inside. When she takes the flowers from me, she gives me a hug too, which I was definitely not expecting, and I kind of shift to the side so that I don't poke her with my man Chucky. The house is pretty full of people milling around, mostly girls I recognize from the club. I got kind of familiar with the regular dancers while I was sitting around on stakeout, so I see faces I recognize even if the non-wigged hair and the pasties-free tits force me to take a second to remember the names. I nod at Monet and Roxy and the delightfully monikered Cessna as Raven brings us into the living room. She takes a seat on the sofa, Maddie sits beside her, and I plop myself in a chair facing them on the other side of the glass-top coffee table. You guys want any food or anything? She asks us. We both decline politely, and then Maddie asks, how you doing? It takes her a second to answer, like she's debating the response. Then, pretty fucking shitty. How about you? The same, Maddie says with a smile. Then Raven smiles too, and then I smile, even though I don't really want to, but I'm trying to be a good boyfriend. Which, over the last couple of days, I've decided is what I am. I've never actually been anyone's boyfriend before, but I mean, once you put on suits and go to funerals and shit with a person and hold them while they cry and listen to them as they pace around their living room muttering about maybe killing people, I don't know. That sounds like some boyfriend shit to me. Do they know what happened yet exactly? Raven's asking me, and Maddie's looking at me too. Yeah, I'm not really sure, to be honest. They're still waiting on the inspection report, and you know, this shit takes time, so. It's not a total lie. Yeah, she says. And then, looking back to Maddie,
Can I ask you a question?
Sure, of course,
Maddie says. What exactly is your story with Carlos Castillo?
I don't know why it feels like we just crested the first major drop on a roller coaster, but it does.
What do you mean? Asks Maddie. How did you come to fall in with him on whatever it is that you're in with him on?
Maddie looks at me. I look back at her with a very helpful fuck are you looking at me for expression. Nice job, Ty. Maddie goes on.
I was trying my hand at running a wedding planning business and he just, like, found me.
Maddie gives her the whole story. How she planned the wedding for his skank daughter. I've actually never met the daughter. She might be a lovely person, but her dad has totally fucked Maddie's life, so I'm being petty. And how she went off and got pregnant with some other dude's baby, and how Maddie had already spent most of the preposterous 200 grand he gave her for wedding shit, and how he's being irresponsible and irrational about getting it back. Maddie tells the whole story unemotionally, being careful to omit anything that might let Raven know that it's Carlos who killed Pete and burned down the club. Raven sits and listens, barely blinking the whole time. Once Maddie finishes, Raven asks,
"The money. When did he start demanding it?"
"What do you mean?"
Maddie asks.
"I mean, did he lean into you the way he has been before you started working for Pete, or after?"
Maddie thinks for a second.
"I dunno,
like sending that dickhead Logan to find you and all that noise. When did that start? Was it after you started dancing, or had you seen him before?"
Again, Maddie considers this.
I don't necessarily remember the timeline, but I guess I don't remember meeting Logan until after I started dancing at Pete's.
The night you flashed him your pussy, was that the first time you saw him?
The night you did what to who? I ask,
which seems reasonable.
Doesn't matter,
Maddie says. I disagree, but there's clearly other shit at work here, so I will choose to table it for later.
What's the deal?
Maddie goes on.
Pete said a bunch of stuff to me about Carlos, too, like he knows him, knew him. I mean, what's going on?
Raven sighs. It makes the bow and ruffles rise and fall with her breathing chest. And just like the night she approached me in the parking lot of the club, she looks younger and softer somehow. It makes me sad, for a reason I can't quantify.
So,
she begins.
Pete had a wife, Carolina.
Is she the one he kept in his office? I ask.
What?
Responds Maddie. I shake my head at her. I don't want to get off track right now. Besides, my dear, two can play the Pete's Secrets game.
Yes, says Raven. That's her. She passed away a few years ago. Pete loved her more than... well, hell. More than anything.
The club? That was her idea.
Really?
Asks Maddie.
Running a strip club was his wife's idea?
Yep. She was a dancer herself back in the 70s, and she experienced some pretty rough treatment, I guess, which is par for the course. But it doesn't have to be. And she wanted to have a place where girls could work and not be exploited and not be judged and not deal with all the garbage that girls have to deal with. I mean, let's not overinflate it. We gotta be real. She was opening a strip joint, not a convent, but still.
If you asked me to pick a moment when I decided that I thought Raven was awesome, I might have to put this one high on the list as a contender.
Okay,
says Maddie.
So what?
Carolina was Mexican. She lived in Mexico, and that club she was dancing in was owned by a young Mexican guy who was just starting to make a name for himself in the entertainment, tequila, and drug running business.
You are fucking kidding me,
says Maddie. Or it might be me who says it. Either way, it's the right reaction for both of us to have.
I am not fucking kidding you, says Raven. And more importantly, he kind of fell in love with Carolina, and he tried everything he could to make her love him back, and blah, blah, blah. Just a plain old sappy story of unrequited love, honestly.
This shit is blowing my mind. And Pete? I ask.
Pete was a recently discharged war vet who was down in Mexico doing whatever guys do when they come back from war.
She tilts her head at me like it's a secret code or some shit. I just wave my hand at her to continue.
And you know, it's not real complicated after that. Pete and Carolina fell in love.
He and Carlos had a lot of bad blood between them. Pete got her the fuck out of Mexico. They settled in Vegas, built a strip club, and lived happily ever after.
I start to point out what Raven already knows.
Yeah, she says. That is until Carolina died and then Carlos found you.
She points at Maddie.
Totally coincidentally, I suppose, working at the goddamn symbol of his one-time heartbreak and failure for probably the one guy he ever met in his life who he couldn't intimidate or bend to his will. And somehow, in Carlos' warped fucking mind, he saw this as a chance to get even somehow, I suppose. And so he tried to fucking win you instead. And when he couldn't do that, he burned down Pete's with Pete inside.
I hate it when I know I have a dopey, slack-jawed look on my face but can't stop it.
Okay, thanks, Raven says to me. I was just taking a shot, but you confirmed it for me with the dumbfounded mug you're wearing there.
I snap my mouth shut, then open it to ask,
but how? Dude, I've been around a long time. I've seen shit. And all the shit with that fucker Logan, I knew it was only a matter of time before it all went pear-shaped. Especially after I saw you,
she points at Maddie again,
show back up after he made off in his car with you on Halloween.
What? What do you mean?
Asks Maddie. Sweetie, no offense, but if Carlos wanted your money, you dead or you, he'd have it. He was just fucking with you to torture Pete, is my guess.
But that doesn't...
What? Raven asks. Make sense? Babe, Carlos is a lot of things, and one of them is crazy, with a capital Cray. You know he won't get on an airplane, don't you?
And then she gets solemn suddenly.
But I never thought...
And goes silent. As do we all. This is a lot to take in. Even with all the surreal shit that calls itself life swirling around me lately, this is a bridge farther than I can imagine having to walk. Carlos was using Maddie to torture Pete? Because of a girl? From like over 40 years ago? You know what? When I stop to think about losing Maddie to some other asshole, it doesn't seem so nuts. The way I feel about her, I'd spend the rest of my life trying to make that other guy suffer. He's not even real. He's just a figment of my very immediate imagination, and I'm already thinking of ways to make his life miserable, so in that regard, I get it.
What are you going to do?
Maddie asks Raven thoughtfully.
Me? Oh, I mean, I'll, you know, rebuild.
Rebuild what? Pete's? Maddie asks.
Of course. What else am I going to do? She smiles. But there's not going to be a place for you, I'm afraid.
Maddie smiles back.
Good.
You know why I busted your ball so hard, don't you? Raven asks her.
Yeah, says Maddie. I do now. Good,
Raven says, and they take each other's hands. I don't know. I honestly have no idea what the fuck is going on. This is some straight-up girl shit happening, but fine, not my place to ask. Is it fucked up that seeing them both dressed in black and holding hands gets me hot? Again, rhetorical, of course it is. Then Maddie asks,
Raven, how did you come to...
Raven shushes her.
That's a whole other story for a whole other time, she says.
Maddie sniffs and laughs.
Okay, she says. But...
She goes on.
Can I ask you one thing, though? For real?
Sure,
says Raven.
What's your real name?
The question hits me in the gut. I don't even know if she's aware of it, but that's the exact question she asked me in my kitchen on Halloween, the night we found out who we are, both to each other and to ourselves. The night she went off and got into a car with Carlos Castillo, the night that everything irrevocably changed forever, in both wonderful and terrible ways. An unsettling smile unfurls slowly along Raven's lips. She regards Maddie, looks over at me, and then looks back at Maddie again. And it reminds me of the last time we saw Pete in his office and how he did the same thing. The weird deja vu I feel at this concurrence of events is both bittersweet and ominous. I've got a sinking feeling that she's going to say, Carolina Flanagan,
or something equally unnerving and disquieting that pastes yet another layer of complexity onto this already far too complicated story that keeps unfolding for us. Shit, she might just say, "My name's Tyler Morgan," and send me spiraling off into the Twilight Zone for good, never to return. I brace for who the hell knows what, and after a few profound, filled beats, her grin grows even wider, and she says, "It's just Raven."
Chapter 2. Maddie. After story time is over, we mingle a little. Raven moves quietly into and between the small groups of people talking in hushed voices. She touches them all, a gentle hand on the arm or shoulder, a small smile. She brushes a piece of hair away from Raquel's face, and it drags a tear along her cheek, which smudges her makeup and leaves a trail of evidence. Raquel cries softly, her uncertain eyes darting anywhere, everywhere, but directly at Raven, like she's embarrassed. Raven comforts her, refuses to walk away until they are face to face, and Raquel is nodding her head and looking her in the eyes, and using the tissue handed to her to dab at her cheeks. They hold hands the way girls hold hands, all 10 fingertips fitting into other fingertips like a puzzle. And for some reason, it reminds me of Girl Scouts. When you made a pledge to your troop buddy, you held her hands that way, and you swung your arms a little, like it was a game, and chanted something simple and pretty about promises and friendship to her. I watch from across the room, mesmerized. I know every woman here, which is surprising, I guess, but not. Kinda like everything else about this day. I mean, I was the morning manager at Pete's. Only for a few weeks, but basically Pete's was my life. Was really the only thing I had. Yeah, Tyler was there, but he was something to be avoided, and Pete's was where I went to avoid him, where I went to avoid the past. And the present, and probably the future too, if I'm being honest. Pete's gave me direction. Pete's gave me purpose. Pete's was a place I could count on. And now there's no place for me there. Words straight out of Raven's mouth. I'm not sad about retiring as a stripper. That would be dumb. But I lost something more than I can quantify in that fire. More than a sense of purpose. I lost, I don't know. Something akin to family, but not. Because family is just something you have or don't. And the people at Pete's are friends. I had Annie, but I never put a lot of effort into Annie. Same for Caroline and Diane. They were just there. I never felt needed by them. I paid my rent. We sometimes ate and drank together. We tanned out by the pool and pretended we were living the dream. But that wasn't real. This, these people, these women who take off their clothes every night and pretend to love their jobs for the sake of their sanity, this is reality. Cold, hard truth. I love them all in some weird way I've never felt before, which is curious, that this room, filled with dozens of women just as messed up as I am, is what really matters to me these days. Their daycare bills, their boyfriend problems, the past they're all running from. It matters to me. And I wonder if I'll be letting them down when I'm not in their life anymore. Will they miss me the way I'll miss them? Who will settle shoe disputes? Who will put them on the schedule? Who will listen with a sympathetic ear when they have to beg for more stage time so they can make the rent? Clearly, there will be someone, right? Raven will be there. Maybe I'm just worried that they won't miss me. They don't need me. Never did need me. I'm just another person in their life with a little bit of power to make it easier, and none of it was about family or friendship or... "Mads," Tyler says, placing his hand on my elbow to direct me over to the kitchen island where there's drinks and food laid out. "You should eat something. Want some crackers?" I look up at him through a blurry haze and realize I'm crying. And even though there's a lot of reasons to cry right now, I don't even know why I'm crying. Is it Pete? Sure, it's Pete. Is it Carolina? Yeah, I think so. Is it Raven? Who isn't the person I thought she was? That too. It's all of it. It's Carlos and Logan and Ricky and the Mexican compound and the debt and the drone and my parents and Scotty and Jeff and the funeral and the wake and how the past is so fucked up and the present looks pretty bad too. And the future? Jesus fucking Christ, what future? Here, Tyler says, handing me a cracker. There's some fancy topping on it. Chopped up cucumbers and mayonnaise with sprinkles of paprika. I eat it because that's just what you do with a cracker. And it's delicious. Did I ever doubt Raven would serve anything but delicious finger food at Pete's wake? Mads, Tyler says, bending down a little to look me in the eyes.
Are you okay?
I nod my head, sniffling as I wipe away the tears. No fucks to give about the makeup I just smeared across my cheeks. But in my head I say, no, I'm not okay. Not yet. But I will be. I'm not entirely sure what I mean by that. I have an idea, but it's vague. It involves a lot of anger and hate and violence. Maddie, Tyler says, trying again, because clearly I am not okay. And that stupid nod wasn't enough to convince him. Can't get anything past Tyler Morgan.
Should we leave?
Leave? I almost laugh. I don't ever want to leave. I want to stay here forever. He nods back at me, slowly, like a hostage negotiator dealing with unreasonable demands. He opens his mouth to say something back, but he's interrupted by silverware clanging on crystal. We redirect our attention from each other to Raven, who is standing in front of her fireplace, glass and spoon in hand, like she's gonna give a speech. Which she does. And soon every woman in the room is crying. Because Pete was one of the good ones, and we all knew it. Felt it, at least. And now he's gone, and our lives have been upturned, sure. But we're not lamenting the loss of our jobs, not really. Because Pete's was more than a job. And we all knew that, too. Raven doesn't elaborate on her plans for rebuilding, or talk about Carlos or Logan or anything like that. It's just the good stuff. Everyone takes a turn telling a story about Pete. We collectively stop crying and start smiling. Some of the stories even make us laugh. Leave it to Raven to fix an entire room of lost women in under 10 minutes. I think that might be her superpower. Soon, everyone has told a story but me. And even though they all know I didn't tell one, they don't look at me expectantly. There's no uncomfortable silence. It's like they understand I can't do it right now. Even though every single one of them managed, I'm not able to manage. The crowd breaks up after that. A few people leave. Tyler and I stand there, silent. So many things to say, unable to say them. And finally, he takes my arm at the elbow again and says, "Let's say goodbye," as he leads me over to Raven. I hug her tighter than I probably should, unable to say what I want to say, but the squeezing makes her understand. She pulls away and smiles. It's the smile of a champion, I realize. A winner. Someone who knows things, has been through things, understands things. "Call me, okay? You've got my number." I nod, dumbly. I didn't, before the fire, I mean. But I do now, because she's been texting me the past few days. Checking up on me, maybe? Which makes me start to cry again. "It's okay," she says, wiping that tear from my face. "It's gonna be okay." Tyler says a few words to her, thank yous and stuff like that. And then he leads me out of her house and down the street to where we parked. He opens my door, waits for me to get in, then closes it softly and walks around to the driver's side. In those few moments, something changes. The devil pops up on my shoulder, and I think it's just his presence. Knowing he's still with me, I think that's what changes.
"We good?"
he asks. "Yep, we good." The driver's side door closing makes Devil disappear, and I take a deep, deep breath as Tyler starts the engine. "So," Tyler says, pulling away from the curb. "So this is how it's gonna go," I say.
"What?"
Tyler glances at me as he turns right onto a main street. "We're gonna kill that motherfucker."
"What?"
"I mean, he deserves so much worse than death, but I'm just not sure I have it in me to torture a man. But if that moment comes, you know, when we've got him, and he's begging for his life, I might." "Yeah," I say, almost talking to myself. "I might be able to, like, pull his fingernails off with a pair of needle-nose pliers, you know? So we won't rule it out."
"Maddie, we're not killing Carlos."
Tyler says this like it's normal to consider it, which I take as a good sign. "Not Carlos, Ty. Logan. Carlos, I haven't decided what I want to do with him yet. I mean, there's so many options. And the Devil has my back, so I'm pretty sure he's gonna come up with something pretty cool." Tyler huffs out something that might be a laugh, but might not. Might be one of those noises one makes when the person riding in the car next to them has gone off the edge, and they have no good comeback for the insanity she's spewing. But I don't mind, or take it personally, because Tyler hasn't really seen me yet. I'm sure on some level he still thinks I'm that innocent teenager he left behind when he went off to war. He still thinks I'm good and pure and sweet, even though he should know better. Because I'm not. I haven't been that girl for a very long time. Even though I've been holding on to that image of myself for years, it's gone. In fact, I'm not sure I was ever the girl next door. I was never the angel. But it's not his fault he doesn't know. I've come to understand that I hide it well, you know? I'm just really good at that. His moment of reflective silence gives me an opportunity to elaborate. "Look," I say, turning in the seat to see him better. My tears are gone. I'm sure I look a mess, but the sadness stayed behind at Raven's house. I'm a different person right now. "I'm not gonna say something stupid like this is all my fault. It's not. And I'm not gonna try to sell you on the idea that this is just about Pete either, or Jeff or Scotty." Tyler raises one eyebrow at me. "It's not. This is called payback, Tyler." I kinda see the word. It comes off angry because it is. Tyler sighs.
"No, this was about Pete and Carlos, Maddie, not you."
"Bullshit," I say. "Carlos found me online."
"How?" "What do you mean? He has a computer? He knows how to use Google?"
"No," I say louder than I should. "No. Look, Raven's story about the bad blood between Pete and Carlos, that's the whole point. Carlos found me, Tyler, first. I didn't take the job at Pete's until after the wedding stuff went sideways."
"Okay. So, that doesn't... You're not making any sense."
"You don't get it. Listen, I was at the drone store..." Tyler's laugh is so loud it startles me.
"Drone store? The good old Droneporium?"
"Fine. I was at a warehouse. But whatever. Warehouse. Store. Same thing."
"Uh-huh. And who runs this drone store?"
I think back, trying to remember the guy's name. "Slade?" I say. "Slate? Slayer? I'm not really sure. Something like that. He was one of those mumblers, you know? Kind of slow with a drawl. Not southern, but redneck, maybe?"
"Okay," he sighs. "So you're buying a drone for this real estate stuff?"
"No, for the wedding planner class I took. That's the point." I say it like, "Duh." He shakes his head, like he's trying to wrap his mind around my totally logical explanation.
"Wait. No, what? No, I thought you bought it for real estate."
"No. I started thinking about it for the wedding stuff. But then that went south with Carlos and shit, and then later I thought I'd do something cool for tourists on the Strip, right? Like chronicle their crazy drunken adventures. But the drone laws are pretty strict, okay? So that wasn't a good idea. And I was just randomly wasting time one day looking for my dream house on Zillow and... voila! Real estate was the answer." He pulls the car over by the curb, stops, pulls up on the e-brake. He blinks at me. 3 times. Slowly,
like this makes no sense, even though it does.
Okay. I'm sorry. I think maybe I need to focus. So let me get this straight. You took a wedding planner class, which gave you the idea for a drone to make videos of weddings.
Yes.
And then you went to find a drone at a drone warehouse where some hillbilly called Slayer was running the joint.
Well, it might have been Slate, or Slade, but yes.
Super. Then you bought a drone and—
No! That's the thing. I didn't have the money for a $12,000 drone back then. I was broke. I didn't get the money until after I was working for Pete. Tyler sighs, pinches the bridge of his nose.
So, when did you buy the drone?
After I started at Pete's. I just told you that. Jesus, I went in—
Was Slate there?
Could have been Slayer or Slade, but no, some other guy. And I told him I'd been there before, looking at the 900XZ, and I wanted it. Oh, and I had cash, because these guys only dealt in cash. Tyler blinks again, twice this time.
So you bought a stolen military drone?
It was not stolen. Tyler sighs, longer and louder than before. It wasn't stolen. I have a warranty, okay? I registered it and everything. These guys were legit.
Terrific. So,
hey, I'm serious. I got a warranty. They had to register it to me before they sold it. It was like a big fucking deal, too. Took them forever, and they had to call a bunch of people, and I'm telling you, it was legit. I am not stupid, okay?
Okay. Jesus. So fuck, I'm just trying to understand what this has to do with Carlos and Pete.
It feels like I'm talking to myself. The first time when I went in and talked to Slater, whoever, and I didn't have the money and I didn't know how I was going to get it, there was a flyer for Pete's on the table.
A flyer?
He says, yes.
For strippers?
Yeah, it was like a help wanted ad. Maybe not really a flyer, it was like a call for strippers.
So you're saying that Pete's strip club was looking for potential strippers at the drone store?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I push him on the shoulder. He's finally getting it. He puts his hands together like he's praying, interlocking his knuckles until they turn white.
Okay. Like, seriously, I don't—
My point is, I took the job at Pete's after the wedding thing went weird. That's all I'm saying. So Raven's story, good as it is, doesn't really add up, does it? I mean, I already knew Carlos when I took the job at Pete's. See what I'm saying? He takes a slow breath like he's trying not to yell or something.
So, okay, let me work out what I think you're saying. You're saying that, like, somehow Carlos steered you to the drone store, knowing that he was going to demand his money back for having to cancel the wedding, but that you wouldn't be able to pay him back, and so he planted a flyer there for Pete's, knowing that you would then have to go become a stripper at the club of his old arch nemesis, and that would eventually lead him to burn the place down? Is that basically what you're saying? Because that is basically what you're saying.
Well, when you put it that way...
So did you know Logan at the time?
Where did that come from? Logan?
No,
I say.
No, I don't think I saw him until the night...
The night you flashed him your pussy, Tyler adds. I narrow my eyes. Really? You want to do this now? He gives me this look that says quite clearly that yes, he does indeed want to do this now. But he's going to be patient and leave that fight for later. And I'm sure he's feeling magnanimous about that very adult decision he just made, because I'm thinking he'd be very stupid to call me out on flashing Logan right now, because I'd go all red-headed devil on him. But I, like him, know when it's time to adult, so I do that. I'm just saying that it's all too coincidental to be a coincidence, you know? He looks at me like he's not so sure.
I thought we all agreed that sometimes things just happen. You, me, your shitty shrink, all of us. We all agree that everything doesn't always have a deeper meaning.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure that does it for me anymore, okay? I don't want to believe that I'm just floating along and shit happens or it doesn't, and it's got nothing to do with me. I can't fucking believe that anymore. I just can't. He reaches across and strokes my cheek. I can't, I say again.
Okay,
he says.
I get it. Look,
Let's just go back to your place and forget about drones and slayers and everything for now, okay? I sigh, leaning back into my seat, because this has been a pretty fucked up day. And say, yeah, sounds good to me. By the time we get back to my house, it's almost dark. Caroline and Diane aren't home, both cars are gone, so they must be at work early tonight. But that's okay. Just means Tyler and I can have the place to ourselves. When we get inside, I reach for the lights, but Tyler's hand on mine stops me. Leave them off, he says, pulling me into his chest. Let's just go straight to bed. I lean up on my tiptoes, kiss his mouth, and whisper back, sounds perfect, as I reach down and grab his cock. He's hard. When isn't he hard? But when I try to pull away, he doesn't let go. His hands come up to my face, palms on my cheeks, and he kisses me back. It's a long kiss, a nice kiss, but there are a lot of promises in that kiss, too. He reaches up under the tulle of my dress and rubs his hand along the inside of my thigh, his cool fingertips tracing the edge of my panties, making me shudder. I kiss him harder, needing him tonight. So glad he's here. He backs me up, pushing me in the direction of my bedroom, ready to make good on his bed idea. When the doorbell rings, we break apart, both of us staring at the door. There's a small window through which we can see the top of a head. Dark hair, probably male. Who the fuck is that? Tyler asks. I don't know, I say, breaking away to go see. But Tyler pulls me back, saying, stay here, pointing a finger down at the floor, and walks over to the door and peeks out the window. Oh, motherfucker, he says, more to himself than me. You've miscalculated badly if you think you're gonna start shit today. He pulls the door open, and I have a second to recognize other guy Ricky Ramirez on the other side of the stoop, just before Tyler's fist crashes into his face.
Chapter 3. Tyler. As I drag him inside and slam the door, I think that I've just about had it with this whole Carlos Castillo gang of idiots. I immediately recognize this dummy as the same t-shirt-wearing jackass I knocked out in the alley behind Pete's, the one I so cleverly dubbed T-Shirt. And even though he's wearing a light sweater today, I'm still going to call him T-Shirt. You know, for simplicity. You start handing out too many nicknames and shit gets confusing. Anyway. On the one hand, it's nice of him to ring the doorbell and stand there like a dumbass, allowing me to see who's there by looking through the fucking window and then punch him in his stupid drug-dealing face for a second time. But on the other hand, it really, really bugs me that these are the dipshits we're dealing with. That these cock knockers are the ones who killed Pete and Jeff and are threatening Maddie. I don't know. Maybe it's just ego, but I think everything would go down for me a lot smoother if it didn't seem like amateur night at the Apollo every time I had to confront one of these clowns. And right as I'm thinking this, I get a powerful reminder about the dangers of hubris. Because just as I'm about to tap him up again and give him a middle-of-the-day nap with a rockabye baby, he spins out of the way with some, like, crazy Krav Maga-looking shit, grabs my arm, pins it behind my back, and then slams me against the wall. Honestly, apart from the fact that my hard-on slamming into sheetrock instead of into Maddie is a huge bummer, I'm pretty stoked. I may have misjudged the guy, and the fact that I now might have a chance to win something resembling a fair fight makes me feel a little less bad about the ass-kicking I'm about to hand out. And then, for the second time in 5 seconds, I am again taught a lesson about overconfidence. Because just as I'm about to push backwards, driving this knob goblin across the room so that I can break free and see just how much pressure his windpipe can take before it snaps, he throws me into a chokehold and presses a SIG P320 against my temple. Well, shit. It may be strange, but the only thought I have in this moment is, this'll be quick. That's a really good gun. I hope the blood doesn't ruin Evan's suit. But before he can pull the trigger, Maddie screams, no! And in return, T-Shirt says, dile a tu amigo que se come, Madison! Now, here's the thing.
I like to think of myself as pretty multilingual. I can say hello, thank you, give me a beer please, and I didn't know she was your daughter in like 6 different languages. But it turns out that while those phrases are more or less all you need to get by in most situations, they don't really help me much in the one I'm in now. What? I ask. Then I tell him, fuck you, dude. What'd he say? I ask Maddie. She ignores me.
What are you doing here? I still have 2 weeks for the money, and you've already taken a more than sufficient deposit, don't you think?
She spits out the words, and then she actually spits at the guy. She's fucking awesome. Maddie, calm down. I'm just here to talk, he says. Huh. Either I speak more Spanish than I thought, or this dude's speaking English now.
What the fuck do you want to talk about?
She steps toward him. He spins me around, putting my body in between him and Maddie. She stops, but doesn't take her eyes off T-shirt. And I can't help but smile. I twist my neck to talk in his direction. Bro, I say, you need to think real hard about what your next move is, because if I'm still standing in 10 seconds, you won't be. And if I'm not, then you really won't be. And I wink at Maddie.
Shit, that was awesome. That's better than most movie dialogue. Maybe I should write screenplays. If I don't die in the next couple of minutes, I'm going to put some thought toward learning how to be a screenwriter.
There's a tense beat where I think he's going to call what he believes is my bluff. It's not. She'll totally kill him if I don't. And blow my brains out. But then he wisely thinks better of it and pushes me forward toward Maddie while keeping the gun on both of us.
Jesus, he says. Do you think if I came here to hurt anybody, that I would have rung the goddamn doorbell?
Yeah, I do, I say. From what I've seen, you guys are really bad at your job.
I just want to talk, okay? I'm gonna put the gun away.
And he commences slowly lowering the gun. I'm just about to Conor McGregor the dude one more time when he asks me, were you special forces? The question grabs my attention, and I stop calculating his demise for a second. It's not that I trust his actions, or really even the question itself, that stops me from turning his day into night. It's the way he asks it. Without an accent. Or at least without a Spanish one, or Mexican, or whatever. My ear is not well attuned enough to regional dialects to be able to discern precisely where this dude might be from, but I likely would not have said Wisconsin, which is where he sounds like he's from now. Or Ohio, Illinois, Idaho, wherever. I don't know. Someplace that my high school speech and debate coach would have called standard American. Which is dumb. There's no such thing as standard Americans. I hate generalizing. But then again, I was just kind of generalizing where T-shirt might be from just because he was speaking Spanish. He could be Russian and just speaking Spanish to throw me off for all I know. I have no idea. Rambling.
Ty?
Maddie looks up and nudges me to bring me back to the present. No. Special Forces? No. EOD. Navy. Why? Fuck do you care? Because you punch like a ranger, he says. And rubbing his jaw, he gets a little smile and adds, it's a compliment. Only been knocked out twice in my life. Once by a ranger in Mosul, and once in an alley behind a strip club in Vegas. By you. This whole exchange just took some unexpected turns. Fuck were you doing in Mosul? I ask him. Fighting ISIL, he says, tucking the gun away in the back of his pants and raising his hands in a gesture of surrender.
Ricky? Says Maddie, shaking her head. What the fuck?
You know his name? I ask, confused and mildly agitated.
He drove me back after I convinced Carlos to give me time to get his money instead of being his sex slave or whatever.
What?
What is she talking about?
I feel like there's a lot I still don't know about what's going on, I say.
Not now,
she says, waving me off. Okay, that's fair. I still haven't told her I burned my apartment down. I'm in no position to judge.
His name is Ricky Ramirez, she says. His card says he's a distributor for Castillo Tequila, which means that he actually distributes Carlos's meth, or cocaine, or whatever the fuck it is.
Ricky nods carefully and volunteers. Yeah, well, I also have another card, which is what I'm reaching for now. Okay? He leans over slowly, unbuttoning the side pocket of the cargo pants he's wearing. I take a step toward him just in case. So does Maddie, which makes me hard again.
Fuck! Jesus Christ, not now, Chucky!
Sure enough, he pulls out a business card cautiously and hands it to me. I hold it so that Maddie and I can look at it together. It reads, United States Department of Justice, Drug Enforcement Administration. I glance up at him without lifting my head. He nods just enough for it to register as a nod. I shift my eyes back to the card. Underneath the header is Richard Martinez, Special Agent.
Chapter 4. Maddie. I take the card from Tyler and read it again just to make sure I'm seeing this right. Yep. D-E fucking A. And then I swing, and my little fist crashes into Ricky's tightly clenched jaw. And there's this weird moment when Tyler looks at me in surprise, and Ricky looks at me in surprise, and I have to collect my thoughts so I can put into words what that punch really meant. But I do it. I smooth an imaginary wrinkle out of my dress, raise my chin and say, S.O.S. Pourmentier. Ricky rubs his twice-punched jaw. What? Tyler says. What did you just tell him? But I ignore Tyler and take another step towards Ricky. I point my finger in his face and say, I hate liars. I get that, he says. I'm sorry. We spent like 11 billion hours together driving back to Vegas. You couldn't tell me this then? I can't risk talking in one of Carlos's cars. I'm risking enough by even being here now and having the damn card on me. And then, I'm so angry I'm seeing red. And then you threatened to kill me if I didn't have the money in time when you dropped me off? I swing again, but Tyler catches me by the wrist before I can make contact. What? I snap, turning my head to glare at him.
Why are you mad at me?
He asks. I'm not mad at you, I snap again. I walk right over to the couch, plop down, causing my dress to flounce out over the sofa cushions, and I hug a pillow to my lap. I'm so mad.
Okay, Tyler says. Can we try again, without the Spanish this time?
He points to both of us with two fingers forming a V shape. Ricky nods.
So, okay. So, you're a fucking DEA agent?
I am. And just so you know, nobody knows I'm here today, says Ricky.
How'd you know we were here? Were you fucking trailing me? I ask him.
I was. I read that Pete's wake was happening and assumed you'd be there.
I am so mad.
Okay, good for you, says Tyler. So what do you want? If you're so goddamned worried about blowing your cover, then why are you here now?
Because it's important. Ricky takes a breath and says, So I work out of the San Diego field office. I've been inside the Castillo organization, working my way up, for the last 18 months. He looks at me like I should care. Fuck him. He threatened to kill me. A threat I took seriously. I made decisions based on that fucking threat, like stripping in the morning at Pete's. Ricky continues.
And it's been tough, like real tough. We're getting shit.
Why?
Asks Tyler.
Because Castillo's crazy, but he's careful. You know why he won't fly. It's not because he has some innate fear of flying. It's because he thinks the U.S. government will shoot him down.
What? Why? I ask. Would you guys really do something like that? There's a pause before Ricky says,
Probably not. But it's what he thinks.
Jesus, this whole thing is insane.
Point is, he doesn't trust anyone. What about his nephew? Unlucky Logan?
Tyler asks. I look at him to explain himself. He shrugs and adds,
My nickname for him. How I keep people straight. This guy was just T-shirt until a second ago. Now he's Ricky DEA.
Logan's his own thing, says Ricky.
Fuck do you mean, his own thing? I snap at him. You know he burned down the club and killed Pete, don't you? On his uncle's orders? Ricky hangs his head and says,
Yeah. Yeah, I know what he did.
So then fucking arrest him, I shout, standing up. Tyler puts a hand on my arm to hold me back, but I'm about 2 seconds from being able to be held back by anyone.
We can't. I can't. If Castillo goes down on a murder charge,